مختم بيعني.
Chef Faisal, good morning. Good morning, colleagues. I'm present.
Good morning.
Ms. Muwatse.
Good morning, Chef Faisal, and good morning, everyone. I'm present.
Mr. Cuthbert.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Morning.
Mr. Malamatia, Chair.
Morning, Chair. Morning, everyone. I'm present.
Morning.
Ms. Mutahum.
Good morning, Chair Person. Good morning, everyone. I'm present.
Morning.
Mr. Kring.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues.
Morning.
Mr. Tswaku.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, everyone. I'm present.
Morning.
Mr. McPherson.
Indicated that you have that is experiencing load shedding. So we acknowledge his presence on the platform.
No problem, Chair. That's all the members currently on the platform, Chair. We have apologies.
Okay, thank you very much. We therefore, because we meet the quorum, we declare the meeting open and welcome everyone to the platform. Can I ask that the agenda be flighted, please? All right, so we're going to the next agenda item, which is apologies.
Chair, we have apologies from Mr. Burns Mumashi, which is indicated, and Mr. Mulder also submitted an apology, Chair.
Thank you. Noted. Can we have a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the agenda as tabled?
Mr. Mubiani, Chair. And Mr.
Mubiani.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I propose that we adopt the agenda as lighted. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mutawi.
Thanks, Chairperson. I second the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you. So in going to the main agenda item, if you can just go up a bit, I think, just go up a bit. There's a part of the agenda I don't see. Okay. Right. So we will then have first a presentation by the DPIC and then Advocate van der Merwe, and then we have tea, and then we have discussions. So in just as a way of introduction into these two items, in December, the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry placed adverts in the national and local newspapers, as well as on all social media platforms of Parliament, inviting stakeholders and interested parties to submit written submissions on additional definitions and clauses in relation to the Copyright Amendment Bill. The committee had initially called for submissions in response to the President's reservations with respect to the Copyright Amendment Bill earlier in 2021. Based on the inputs received, the committee intended going beyond amending the sections in the Act as envisaged in the Copyright Amendment Bill, as well as substantive amendments to existing clauses. Therefore, the committee re-advertised the relevant clauses and called for further submissions in this regard. The purpose of today's meeting is to receive the response from the DTIC and Advocate van der Merwe with respect to the submissions received in relation to the last call. It must be noted that in dealing with the remitted bills, the committee is guided by Joint Rule 203, which states the following, that the committee must consider and confine itself to the President's reservations. However, on the 18th of June, the joint tagging mechanism in terms of Joint Rule 106 classified both bills as Section 76 bills. This means that once the bills are transferred for concurrence to the National Council of Province for considerations, the bills in their totality would once again be open for public comments. Therefore, matters falling outside the scope of the President's reservations while they cannot be considered by this committee, can and should be considered during the NCLP's process. We then hand over to Deputy Minister Gina, Majola, I think, who is on the platform leading the DTIC delegation.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to you, Chair of the committee, and good morning to all the honorable members. I also extend greetings to the parliamentary support staff and officials from the DTIC. Chairperson, thanks very much for your opening remarks, which have now clarified the purpose of today's deliberations. From the side of the DTIC, our presentation is going to respond to the submissions that have been received from the public following the public call by Parliament. Our presentation will be led by Dr. Masoja. So with your permission, Chair, I'll request that you allow Dr. Masoja to make our presentation. It is quite a lengthy presentation, taking into account that we received 50 odd submissions during the public comments process. So we will try and summarize, but try and cover all the comments that have been received from the public. So with your permission, with your kind permission, Chair, can you please allow Dr. Masoja to present the DTIC's comments on the submissions.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister Majola. Dr. Masoja.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to the Deputy Minister Majola. Good morning to the honorable members, to members of the public. I would like to also greet my colleagues, the Commissioner of the CIPC, Advocate Rory Vola, Ms. Henry Padayachi, Dr. Ria Nonyana Mugabani, and also to acknowledge the late McDonald Nchitenje, who passed on in December of 2021, who was very instrumental in the conception of the legislation, this remitted bills, and may his soul rest in peace. I will then slide the presentation, Chair, and as indicated, the presentation is quite lengthy. So one will then try to ensure that the way it's approached is in a very that it's summarized and it's addressed in a way that will not be too long, but it's just also to indicate that the stakeholder comments were noted and taken into serious consideration. And Chair, just to check from your side how the sharing appears, I'm having some challenges with the, I think it's the formatting from my side. If I struggle
just
a bit.
Just go to the display settings. We've seen two slides, so go to display settings so that you then, yeah, that will.
Okay. Sorry, Chair. I think what I will then, maybe I'll ask my colleague Tolu to assist me with this, because the display setting, Tolu, can you flight it for me, please?
Can you please stop sharing your screen?
Yeah. All right. So you can move from the slide, please. Yeah, you can also move from the purpose, as indicated by the Chair and the DM. We are here to respond to the public submissions. related to the second call of comments that we publicized in December and received in January. So these bills, they have quite a history in the parliamentary processes. They were adopted by the National Assembly in 2018 December, and then in March 2019 by the NCOP, and then they were referred to the president. And after that, they were referred back from the president to the Speaker of Parliament in the National Assembly. And they are then being addressed for, in the, from the context of the Section 79, subsection 1 of the Constitution, where the President raised reservations with the constitutionality of the bills. Next slide, please. So this was a process. I'll summarize it. There were two calls of for submission. The president raised six reservations. I will not go into them in this particular presentation, but there were specific subsections that he dealt with, and that the committee addressed some of them. And now we are dealing with issues related to the exceptions and the international treaty implications as advertised based on the previous processes. And I would like to just highlight the point that the chair also reiterated about in terms of the constitution, that the committee is limited to the reservations that were raised by the president. And this point I'm emphasizing also because we did receive many submissions from the public where other issues were included that were not in the list of those that were recommended by the president, and they looked at some stakeholders looked at the entire bill and not necessarily those specific provisions. So just to reiterate that point that has already been highlighted, and also to indicate that this current amendment were informed by the public, and they were also an attempt to address the concerns that the president has raised with the bills. Next slide, please. There were stakeholders who made submissions, but then did not support the amendments. Some argued that they were the proposed amendments were outside the scope of the president. And from there, our analysis of the proposals is that the areas which seem to be outside are those that have treaty implications. So the treaty implications have warranted that some of the proposed amendments be considered for this round of amendments. And so the next proposals will, the next approach to the different proposed amendments will also highlight that most of them were issues that were recommended by the public, and they are issues that requires that something has to be dealt with in those amendments. And we did consider all the proposals and the submissions, and you will note in the slides that are going to follow, we took into account as many inputs as possible, and so that point is important so that everyone knows that their issues were noted, and the public participation process was taken very, very seriously. So our understanding is that because of the substantive nature of some of the proposals made, they necessitated that we then, the committee, with the recommendation of the parliament and the department, consider these amendments. Next slide, please. You can move from this one. So the format followed for the amendments is the one for the proposed amendments that were the document that went out for the adverts. So the sequence is similar to the advertised clauses that were publicized to the public, starting with issues related to Section 19B on issues of persons with disabilities. And the first amendment is related to the accessible format copy definition. So this definition is addressed to address the issue of alignment to the treaty. We consider it a minor amendment. However, based on some few comments received, there were views that it's not as minor as it is. So the wording suggested there was to include the wording including for that alignment. And the comments that we received was that the accessible format copy, as defined, is opposed to the definition in the Marrakesh Treaty. And this point was made that even though including two is highlighted, the definition has a wider, it's got a wider implication in terms of how it is applied in this particular bill. And on the same breath, there was a comment around the works that are included in the bill related to the accessible format copy. So the suggestions were not to remove including or retain including, but to say that even though there is that wording including, it's got a bigger context than the way that we have advertised it. So if you move to the next slide. Our response for that is that we do note the proposed the views around the broadness of the definition, and the policy position was that as much as the legislation the Marrakesh Treaty provides for particular, we took a policy principle that we need to widen the definition for more rights to accommodate persons with disabilities in the country. And we felt that's a very important consideration, and also that it's in line with other jurisdictions around the world that have similar considerations made. So this is not unique to South Africa. There are other forms of disabilities that move beyond the visually impaired or other print disabled. And the treaty provides the minimum, and we then undertook to expand to ensure that there's more rights provided. And on the words, the same approach applies. So we, as the department, are of the view that the wording including should be retained. We recommend it be retained, and also the policy position of the wideness of the amendment be considered, because we know it is one of the contentious issues that has been raised to say other forms of disabilities are not affected by this, but we do know there are other learning disabilities, hearing disabilities, other forms of conditions that affect learning and how one receives learning in their day-to-day activities. So we think that it's very important that we keep this policy position. We just wanted to ensure, we clarified that for the purposes of this for this presentation. So the next one, the next item is on the authorized entity, the definition of the authorized entity. This is a new definition in the bill. And it's aimed to incorporate the authorized entities who provide for these accessible format copies. And also the definition is in line with the treaty. It's to ensure that there's alignment with treaty implications with the Marrakesh Treaty. in the previous rounds of submissions, stakeholders recommended that we look at this definition. And there was an overwhelming number of stakeholders that recommended it. So we also think that it's important that we provide for the authorized entities in the bill. So this, then the next slide, please, I talked to the stakeholder comments themselves around that. So I'll read two and then just summarize the rest. So one of the stakeholders said that the current definition is potentially open to abuse by persons who are not really concerned with persons with relevant disabilities. So the wording as one of its primary activities or institutional obligations should be changed to as its primary activity or institutional obligation or as its principal activity or institutional obligation. So there was a suggestion around there to say there is room for abuse of its primary activities and it should be considered. Another wording was proposed. And then on the same primary activities, which was one of the main inputs around this, was that it should be interpreted broadly to include organizations whose key purpose is to advocate for interests of people with visual and print disabilities, but not necessarily that being their primary activities. So there was views that it should be narrowed, others saying that it might be too wide, and some suggesting that it should be maybe removed, the primary activities must be removed. And other comments were related to some of the expressions in the definition, like the words government. For instance, there was a comment that is saying government in the Marrakesh Treaty is vague. And because it's vague, maybe it should be clear about the spheres of government it's referred to in the bill. And maybe there should be a definition of what government is. So our approach to this suggestion is that we looked at the Marrakesh Treaty definition and the publicized definition from our advert. And the thinking is that maybe the language as used, we should retain it because of alignment to the treaty itself. And that some of the issues that might be clarified further in the regulation, especially the non-policy related issues. And that the definition be retained, including the primary activities as one of its primary, as is in the treaty, to align to the treaty language. So we didn't see that much of a divergence between the suggestions made by the public and the what has been advertised, and we didn't foresee unintended consequences of retaining what is in the definition. Next is Tulu. And then there was an amendment consequential in section 19D, subsection 1, where as may be prescribed was removed because of the inclusion of the authorized entity. And however, the public on that one responded. There were comments around it to say that deleting the as may be prescribed may have unintended consequences for the works that have already been transformed into an accessible format. For example, your braille and for the audio recordings that are proprietary to the entity that transformed or converted such accessible copies. So, and then this will infringe any copyright ownership rights that a nonprofit or authorized entity may enjoy from the creation of the accessible format. So there was a concern about that. And there was another comment that said that the insertion of authorized entity in this subsection does not show the defect of the section, in that by keeping the phrase any person that serves, including this requirements, including for the person serving the persons with disabilities. This will not take away the defects of the issues around this provision. So we and there were also and there was another suggestion around the wedding. All right, around the wording in terms of the correction, there was a grammatical suggestion to correct on one, subsection one, there's any person that serves to any person who serves. So those are the few amendments that were noted for 19D subsection one. And we then recommend as a DTIC that the prescribed be retained to address the concerns. So we also support the recommended amendment of authorized entity, and as well as the correction of the any person versus any person that versus any person who for subsection 1, 2, and 3. Next slide, please. And then there was suggestions. There was a proposed amendment for 19D subsection 3 on the authorized entity, the trans-border requirements for the importing and the exporting. On this one, the additions we're looking at the issues of the how the importing and exporting and the defense, the burden of proof in terms of the manner in which this this works are addressed. It was proposed in the processes of amending this to say that this was related to the EU directive wording to reword to align with the treaty in a positive obligation rather than a negative one, and that the tense addressed here should be more positive than negative. And also the issue with the language, the use of the past and the future tense in the defense around this provision. So there was a concern around this provision, but then our intention with it was to ensure that there is this cross-border requirement strengthened, and also to ensure that it's aligned with the international treaty, the Marrakesh. The next slide, please, Tulu. So on this amendment, the public raised a concern, and the issues were then grouped together that the wording that has been proposed is not aligned with that of the treaty. It imposes additional burdens or obligations upon people with disabilities, and that the new amendment should be deleted and be replaced with the context in the Marrakesh Treaty. And there was a drafting suggestion that is also similar to the treaty itself. We can move to the next slide. So in our response, the green highlighted wording there is how it reads in the treaty. So in the treaty, maybe just to for it to make sense, it says an authorized entity shall be permitted without the authorization of the right holder to distribute or make available for the exclusive use of beneficiary persons accessible format copies to an authorized entity in another contracting party, provided that prior to the distribution or making available, the originating authorized entity did not know or have reasonable grounds to know that the accessible format copy will be used for other than beneficiary persons. So the concern is that that did not know or have reasonable grounds to know has been amended although it's now more positive, it's also read. It was read by many stakeholders as adding more burdens to the persons with disabilities, and also to the organizations that support them. So we recommend that the wording should be aligned to the treaty, given the fact that it was interpreted widely to not align to the treaty language, and also to have those unintended consequences and burdens. However, we are also mindful of the rationale why we had to make it positive. So because of the concern with the drafting language of the tenses and the negative defense, we are of the view that if there is another wording that can be considered that is not substantive in nature, but that has a similar effect, it could be considered for further consideration. Next slide, please. On the next slide, the comment was around 19D, subsection 4, subsection B. On this one, the concern was the word use of the accessible format copy exclusively by a person with a disability. The reason why this was raised as a concern, a comment was made that this puts more emphasis on the end use than on the supply of the work itself to the so the focus is it adds a burden. The focus is more on what happens to the work, and that is not supposed to be the case. So, and then there was a recommendation that this must be deleted, and we as a DTIC then are of the view that it can be deleted because the implications of this provision is already embedded in the main 19D and also the other subsections. So we think that removing it will not cause any harm to the process. So we noted the submissions there. Next slide, please. So on the next slide, in terms of the sequence, it's clause 33, section 39. That deals with the regulations. This is mainly to look at the regulations that deals with the authorized entity. And the main input that was noted here was the one about the referencing. There was a suggestion that there is a referencing issue. The sequence has been a small c and a big cap letter, and then in 39CL, the L is small. The other comments were more like a comment for noting than suggesting any particular suggestion. So for example, a comment that says that the minister must make regulations providing for processes and formalities related to the authorization or recognition by the government of entities that provide education, instructional training, adaptive reading, or information access to persons with a disability on a non-profit basis. So, and then another comment was looking at another subsection that was not advertised, but it was important to take that into account as well. So then I would suggest that we move from this slide to look at also in the interest of time. The next one is the definition of broadcast. This was one of the major amendments and proposed changes to the definition of broadcast. So in the previous policy discussions, we then recommended that there should be wire in the definition of broadcast, although we were cognizant of the issue of the treaty alignment. And in the recent round of comments, it was suggested that wire must be removed to ensure compliance with the treaty implications. And then it was undertaken that it be removed. However, we were also mindful of there could be other unintended consequences with this. But so following the proposed amendment, we received comments on this. Next slide. So many of the comments were not in support of inclusion of WIRE. And then there were some comments that also pointed to another legislation that deals with issues of communication, which is the Electronic Communications Act, to say that why don't we rather use that definition in that act, because this will make this one inconsistent. Why don't we be consistent and apply that? And then there were other stakeholders who were of the view that we don't have to take the treaty language as it is, because of other implications. And so there were mixed views around this. For example, the proposed definition does not include current or new broadcast technologies, rather use telecommunication. And then there was other comments that acknowledged the other processes in other other legislation, that there's a white paper that has been put out on issues of related to broadcast. And that they were also noted that we are not taking into account the relationship between broadcast and other, like the program carrying signal, for instance. We are not looking at this. We are looking at this in a very narrow manner in terms of this is just broadcasting. Next slide, please. Yeah, so there were various comments, for example, to say that by excluding transmission by wire, the definition will exclude licensed broadcasters who currently broadcast content by wire. So, and then the issue of the alignment between the Performance Protection Amendment Bill and the Copyright Amendment Bill on the definition of wire, ensuring that there is that consistency. And so overall, the comments were noted. Others were challenging the terminologies used in the definition, like partially, wholly, what does that mean? Wireless means, what does that mean? And so on. So in terms of our response to the public comments, we are of the view that wire should be retained in the definition. We recommend to the PC that it be retained due to the unintended consequences and concerns raised by the public. We also note that the wire transmission is still applicable, for example, the other industries, and that removing it might have implications for them that still take into cognizance the wire transmission mode. And we are also noting the concern that the way we approach broadcast highlighted that there might be confusion about the link between communication to the public, making available to the public, and program carrying signal. And we are saying that we note that link, and we also note that there are other provisions in the bill that has got the implications of wire. And the issue of the alignment between the performance protection and the copyright on the definition has been taken into consideration. And in terms of the Electronic Communication Act, we acknowledge that legislation. Yes, we are also mindful of the fact that we are not using the same definition. However, we are saying that there is no conflict that we have identified on that, on the ECA definition and our definition. And we are also saying that we are aware of the different legislative processes currently underway to review the issues around broadcasting. So there might be changes on the definition of broadcasting in the pipeline. So on that basis, and also the international debates around broadcasting at WIPO, so there is a discussion around the possible treaty and so on. So we think that for now, while with all these legislative processes in place, we could retain the current definition, and we recommend that we just focus on the wireless part without extending to the other legislation. So that's our recommendation on broadcast. Next slide, please. The next one is lawfully acquired. The lawfully acquired recommendation and proposal for amendment was also received from the public in the last round of comments. It was a proposed amendment to strengthen the issues around personal copies and the possible exploitation of the works of the copyright owners and the authors without compensation. And we included it also to ensure that balance of the rights, balance between access and the rights of the owners and the authors. And also we were aware that it's a new amendment. It might have other implications that we have not been mindful of. The same regulations were adopted or promulgated in the UK. And yes, they have been set aside as per one of the comments that we have received. And they have been set aside. So we'll move to them to the public comments in the next slide. So the amendment is in 12B, subsection 1, and also in the definition. So in terms of the public views around this, there was a strong view around the non-retrogression policy that, in law that has been violated and the constitutional rights that have been impeded on. So this was widely across various stakeholder groups to say, we already have the right to make personal copies and now these rights are being eroded or are being taken away. And it will have implications for access to research, access to education, access to information. So the recommendations were that remove this lawfully acquired. Other stakeholders were of the view, why don't we talk about the private copy levy for copying, for private copying? There should be that process to incentivize authors and copyright owners for their works instead of just having this exception without consideration of the private copy levy. And then there were views that perhaps this amendment needs to be properly assessed. It needs to undergo a legal assessment for it to be considered. And a number of stakeholders suggested just remove it, delete it from the proposed amendment. And then there were other suggestions that to say, why are we even considering this when the UK put it under judicial review? Then there were suggestions of the wording to say, why not use lawfully accessed instead of lawfully acquired? So there were these various suggestions and also contention around this, especially the taking away of the rights. And that this definition is flawed because they could be, it's limited to what is deemed to be lawfully acquired. And it is not possible to cover all forms of lawful acquisition in the definition. So let's move to the next slide, please, start looking at our response. So most of the issues were in that context from the stakeholders. Our response is that we did consider the public concerns, and we also noted the developments with the UK regulations, similar regulations that were set aside or dismissed by the courts. And we therefore recommend to the committee to remove lawfully acquired from the bill. This is because of the possible unintended consequences and the interpretation challenges that it can bring to the courts or in terms of the interpretation of this. And also, Okay. So in terms of so in terms of that, we are saying that we are recommending that it be removed, and we also noted that there was a provision that mitigated the there was a provision that mitigated the lawfully acquired in the proposed advert themselves. There was a provision that was added. We don't know maybe whether the stakeholders...
Dr. Masoja, can we just wait for the presentation to come back? Okay, there we go. In just getting to the page we were on.
Noted, Chair.
I think it was 22 or 23.
It was 23.
23.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Thank you, Sulu. Yeah. So on this, so there was a sub-provision that was saying that the factors associated with making a personal copy set out in this subsection does not apply to a copy made in terms of another exception provided in this Act. It was intended to mitigate for that concern of the taking away of the other rights in the other provisions. But we also noted that it might have that confusion and complication of this cross-referencing between sections when this one applies here, the other one does not apply there, and that's legal confusion around it. And then we were not, in terms of the rationale, it was informed by the public participation, by stakeholders. So it was not the intention of from the DTIC to take away the rights in this regard, especially the constitutional rights and the rights to access to research, access to information, access to personal copies. So it's just to add that point to this. So we can move to the next proposed amendment, which is the ephemeral exception. So in terms of the ephemeral exception, there's an advertised clause. We can move to the next one, the advertised that deals with the proposed amendments from the Canadian Act, Copyright Act, on issues affecting broadcasters. And we took that as a replica from that legislation based on the public submissions that recommended that there should be rights provided for other rights holders apart from the broadcaster, so that there's a there's fairness in terms of remuneration, there's fairness in terms of access to records, and reporting and so on. So we then considered the public participation and incorporated this in the bill. However, there were unintended consequences also noted with this suggestion. So we'll move to the next slide on this. Okay. So in terms of the public comments, I'm going to try to summarize them. Overall, there was an issue around the language of the Canadian model versus that of our legislation. Some of the terminologies or concepts in the Canadian model versus the Copyright Act concerns, even with the current bill, and some of the rights that referred to in the, for example, there were concerns with the use of the telecommunication, the telecommunication rights, and others were saying that it does not exist in terms of our legislation, and that must be taken into consideration. So a few number of stakeholders raised that. The emphasis on the collecting society was also brought in to say we don't have such a collecting society in the country, and also how will it work in practice. So there were concerns around the licensing issues and the implications of this. And some of the wording used, some of the rights, like the right to synchronize, to say we don't have such a right in the Act. and also the rigorous or burdensome reporting requirements that are placed on the broadcasters. Now there will be more burdens for the broadcasters in terms of responding to requests for records and so on. So there were concerns about the additional burdens that this will also bring into the situation, and that overall it's not fit for purpose in the bill, that if there should be a consideration of removing it. We can move to the next slide. Also, there were other suggestions to incorporate other suggestions around it to strengthen the current proposed amendment. And yeah, so there were certain suggestions like on the issues of referencing how we call this a right when it's not necessarily a right. Correct referencing, and then the reference to the cinematographic work, which is an error because we are now moving towards using the audiovisual work in the bills instead of cinematographic work. So there were many unintended consequences identified in terms of compatibility between the Canadian model and the South African context. So we can move to the next slide, please. And conceptual issues like what is the official archive, what is official, what does official mean, and so on, and what does archive mean, and so as a way forward, we are recommending as a department that we noted the comments of the public, and we also noted the unintended consequences that have been highlighted. We are also indicating that we note that we adopt, this is from the Canadian copyright law. Furthermore, that we got this recommendation from the previous public participation process. We wanted to ensure fairness and that we had the public, they wanted this to be considered, and this has been considered in this process. So we noted other referencing issues and other concerns about the terminologies and for instance, the reference to the ephemeral recording and so on. So in summary, we are recommending that this recommendation be removed from the bill and that the current provision that deals with ephemeral exception be retained. So more work still needs to be done around this.
Can we just ask Session Raja to mute, please?
Apologies.
Okay. Thank you very much. Sorry, Dr. Masoja, we might continue.
Thank you, Chair. So yeah, we think that there might be in future a need to assess do more work around the Canadian model of the ephemeral exception and to look at the legal conceptual matters around it. But at this current stage, as it stands, it has many implications. And I think the fair part of it is that it was put out in the public, it was proposed by the public, and we looked at it from the context of ensuring that there are proportionalities of rights across the different copyright-based industries. So, but when it has consequences as those highlighted, then we need to also take them into consideration. So the next one is around the translations. So on the translations, there were not many issues raised. However, we noted a few. There was an amendment considered on the issues of language and cultural considerations as part of the amendment to this provision. So we can move to the next slide, Solo. So the issue is that there were comments made that the translation exception, it goes beyond what is reasonably required to ensure that works can be read in all South Africa's official languages, that it has an effect to be abused. and it might have an implication for other industries, for instance, the publishing industry. So there was a concern raised about the translation. A concern was raised that it might lead to challenges for the indigenous languages. It might create discrimination for the indigenous languages. And then there was a proposed amendment around this, the issue of translation. There was a proposal, a drafting proposal that was made. And then there was also some comments made around the use of the word all. In the amendment, there's an all that is standing there. So the question was, the all must be omitted because the subsections are independent as they stand. And the other one was related to the same all, and then it was asking whether this was intended to be independent or and there was an assumption that it's being made. So for this one, we are of the view that based on the fact that we didn't receive many concerns around this provision, we note the concerns that are raised about the wideness of the suggestion and the implications it might have on the public, on the other industries. But we also think that in terms of human rights and also other rights that will be added to the legislation with this provision, we recommend that the proposed amendment be retained as advertised. And those minor issues around the law be addressed. The proposed drafting suggestion, from our review of it, it's a good suggestion. However, the only difference with it is that it has the wording, the extent justified by the purpose, but it's similar to what has been advertised. So the view is that rather than making any further changes, we can just work with what is provided for in the advertised provision. We can move to the next slide. So the next one is around the definition of the technological protection measure. So in this definition, initially access control related measures were not taken into account, they were excluded. And in the previous round of comments, there was an overwhelming number of stakeholders who were of the view they should be taken into consideration to ensure more protection, more IP protection and for enforcement purposes, also for the rights of the authors and the copyright owners. And we were also mindful of the fact that by including this proposed amendment of deleting the subsection B, which was saying that it was defining what a TPM is, and it was also saying it does not include a process, treatment, mechanism, technology, device, system, or component to the extent that in the normal course of its operation, it can, in the normal course of operation, sorry about that, it can, it controls any access to any work for non-infringing purposes. So that part was recommended to be removed, and so we supported that it be removed to strengthen the definition of the TPM, and that's how the definition was then changed. But we're also aware that there could be unintended consequences for the exceptions, because there were many stakeholders who raised a concern with the fact that by having a very strong technological protection measure facility or controls, then there's also the risk of access to the exceptions, access to education, access to knowledge. Next slide, please. We received several proposals, but there were mixed comments around this. There were strong views that there is an improvement in the definition. It does provide legal protection, but that protection is not adequate because of the other other amendments or consequential amendments that are also required in the other sections that deals with infringements and prohibited conduct related to the to the technological protection measures. At the same breath, there were stakeholders who were concerned that this amendment is similar to the US model of the technological protection measures and is very strong and it has got harmful effects. So from a South African context, it should not be considered. And then there were others who were saying that the deletion must not be allowed because it's going to have implications for freedom of expression. It's going to have implications for access issues to the public. And there were also concerns about the uses of these TPMs in terms of their implications for prohibiting conduct and also issues around criminal implications and so on. So we can move to the next page. There were concerns also by some of the stakeholders that they advised previously that the committee should not consider these amendments any longer because of other laws, the other legislation that has overtaken that provides for a similar requirement. The reason why I'm pointing that out, that proposal has been said a few times to say remove this requirement because it has been there before and there's a new law that is now looking at a similar issues or similar provisions. And so we noted that. So and then there were other suggestions to expand this definition to device or service that are there for non-commercial use, especially for persons with disabilities. The response from our side, from the DTIC on this one, is that we recommend to the committee that the B, subsection B that I was just reading out, be retained, be excluded, meaning the advert as advertised, be sustained, meaning the advert is retained as it is. Let me explain why. We have been challenged significantly. So since the legislation was went to the president, we had various engagements with different stakeholder groups, including global stakeholders. And there were concerns that our enforcement mechanisms on IP law is very weak in the South African context, especially on IP piracy, on enforcement issues. There was a concern that our legislation is not strong in this regard. So, and it has other implications. For instance, implications for how IP is measured in the context of the country. So we try to look at it holistically when we looked at the proposal to look at what does this really mean, not only for the bills, but for our standing in IP enforcement, IP piracy issues and so on. And we do note the concerns about the access issues and the fact that there could be a potential conflict between access and protection. But we recommend that on that basis, we retain this the definition of the as advertised without the B included. And we also say we note that there are other legislation that addresses these issues, but we think that the legislation in its own provisions must have strong provisions that addresses the issues in its own right. So we note the other laws, but we are saying that let's still have this in the copyright amendment bill. Next slide, please. So the same principle applies to the technological protection measures, the convention device. The definition was also advertised. There were new provisions included in this definition. We note those are amendments. And we did not receive many comments on this. More was more on the technological protection measure itself. But then we can move to the next slide on this definition. So there were stakeholders who proposed that the new additions be removed. for example, the BNC that was added to the definition dealing with the promotion, advertising or marketing of these circumvention devices. Also the issues around the with limited commercial significant purpose. So there were the proposed amendments was recommended that they be removed. So the principle is the same as the response provided for the technological protection measure. And just to add that we've noted that in other countries they are approaching the same, they're approaching this in a similar manner of ensuring that there is more protection. And we did benchmark from EU to other legislation. The access controls, copy controls are taken into consideration. So we recommend that this definition then be considered further to ensure that we are in line with international requirements when it comes to IP law enforcement, IP piracy management, and so on, to ensure that we protect while we manage the issues of access at the same time. Next slide, please. So the next slides are also related to the provisions that deals with the technological protection measures. They look at the prohibited conduct. They look at the exceptions in respect of technological protection measures, and also looking at the exceptions in respect to copyright management information. So the changes that were made there was the standard or the issues around the obligations or the sanctions in terms of the strengthening for the offenses, strengthening issues around the offenses. So we strengthen the condition or requirement in terms of obligations or the accountability in terms of the way that one would have prohibited certain conduct around these issues. So the wording that was prominent in the amendment was the switching from the has reason to believe to should reasonably have known. So we can move to from the slide. So these were the changes that were made around the requirements for the prohibited conduct and also for the exceptions. The comments that were made, some of the stakeholders welcomed them. Although there were still concerns that there is a, many stakeholders were concerned about Section 28P in terms of the wedding that is there, the some of the permitted uses and so on. There was more concern about 28P and also some of the suggestions that were made around the there has reason to believe to say. It is proposed to replace the phrase has reason to believe, which requires intentions, with the phrase should reasonably have known, which imposes criminal liability based on negligence in the sections. This will result in more actions being criminalized. And there was also issues of using negligence as a ground for criminal liability. So like there are unintended consequences, there are stronger provisions which may have implications that were not intended, and also the proportionality of the conduct versus the sanctions and the offense. So there were concerns raised with those amendments. And then there was one that was not necessarily advertised, but it's like a correction that might be considered around the Section 28S, where there's a reference to a performer instead of just a copyright owner. So most of them were brought talking to other provisions, but then that issue of reasonably have known, which is part of the advert, came out strongly as well. So to the next slide, please. So So to respond to this, we say that the reasonably have known, we saw it as a more objective measure, which was meant to strengthen the provisions as highlighted. However, based on the public concerns, we suggest that the current wording be retained. So we recommend that the reasons to believe be retained as was in the bill. And we also note that some of the suggestions were outside the scope of what was advertised. There were a few submissions that talked about a tribunal to say that where permitted uses are concerned and there's a dispute and the copyright owner does not allow access to a work, there should be a tribunal that is introduced to adjudicate on those disputes. It was not advertised, but it was a notable point that came across from various submissions. And also the point about the performer mentioned in Section 28S, not advertised, but if it's a correction that can be accommodated, we think that it's important because it's going to just clarify that provision. Next slide, please. Then the next slide is about the digital rights that were added. They were informed by the proposals from the public. The public were concerned that these rights were never taken into account and they need to be also incorporated in the amendment bill. So these are the rights for the published edition and for the computer programs. So these are the amendments that were added. There are similar provisions in the bill looking at other works like artistic and musical works, audiovisual works. They've got this similar provision. So it's not a new set of provisions. So we can move to the next slide. On this one, there was a concern about the inconsistency of this provision versus the broadcast provision that was advertised to remove wire. Because if you have removed wire, then you have wireless in your new digital rights. There was a concern there about the incongruency or inconsistency. And also, there was also a concern, which was also raised related to the broadcast, on the conceptual confusion about the communication to the public, making available to the public, and then the right to broadcast, and also the rights to program signal, a carrying signal. And also there was a point made that the use of the word original is a concern in the, especially on distribution, because that's a conceptual incorrect way of using the word original. It was a technical term in copyright law. And now you're talking about distribution and you're talking about copies, and then you also, there's a mention of original. So there was a concern raised about that. And there were other concerns that were mentioned. And there was a correction that was suggested, but not in an advertised provision on the services where there's a, to change the wording, services to service. There was a concern that maybe there should be that consideration there in terms of correction. So we can move to the next slide. On this slide, all we are doing is just to clarify ourselves in terms of the wireless communication to the public, making available to the public. It's just to bring that clarity from our perspective. So we acknowledge that these rights are there and they are treaty-related digital rights, and also that they are provided for in the Berne Convention, and it does make a distinction between them and broadcasting. So we also take into consideration that we already have them in the current Copyright Amendment Bill in Clause 4, 6, 8, and 10. And also, we take cognizance that they are interrelated. So they are not, you make available to the public, you communicate to the public, therefore you make available to the public. And also, there are other implications also for distribution. And similarly, the program Clearing Signal is a copyright work. A broadcast or a program clearing signal shall not be, it's related to satellite transmission. It has to be in a, it has to be transmitted in a satellite. So this term, we acknowledge that legally these are related, but also we are mindful of the fact that there are various perspectives when it comes to copyright. There are experts who are of the view, even if we removed wire from broadcast, even if we did, but retained in the other subsections, they could still work, even though one would say, but this one is, we are now removing wire from this, now it's not, it's, but you still keep it in the others. Others are of the view, it can still work, you can still apply that right. But that's another thing about legal minds, legal opinions. You find that this perspective says this and that the other one says that. But I just wanted to bring this in just to clarify that we've noted this concern about the conceptual confusion around these rights. They are interrelated, they are interlinked, they are treaty-based types of rights. We have considered them, they form part of the legislation that we are busy developing now, and they have specific articles where they are in the different treaties, like the WIPO Copyright Treaty. So we note that and we take that point about the concerns about the inconsistencies. So we can then, on the original, it's the same, the principle we are following is around the treaty language. We note the conceptual, practical approach to say original versus what you are distributing. Can you distribute or original or a copy? But in our view, we took this from the language of the treaties. And we think that we should retain original that way because it's also descriptive of a work from original or copy. So we noted the concern, but we think that we should retain the wording as it is. There were not many issues raised with the digital rights. In fact, stakeholders were supportive of the fact that we have included them in the bills. Next slide, please. So the next slide is on section 27, where we included 5A. This was to ensure that there are legal tools introduced for enforcement to talk to the digital rights, the right to communicate to the public, the right to making available to the public. And this was incorporated to take that into cognizance. So we can move to, one of the amendments of interest is the first, on 5A, we say that any person who at the time when copyright subsists in a work without the authority of the owner of the copyright and for commercial purposes, that's the one of the areas where concerns were raised, can move to the next page. But that commercial purpose, I'll reference to it in the subsequent. And then there were other amendments on section 5B. There were section 5B and also 5C, and they relate to that strengthening of the defense for the sanctions of reason to believe or should have reasonably have known. So it's the same kind of amendment that we dealt with in the previous slide on the technological protection measures. We can move to the next slide. So there were comments that were made around this this amendment, and some stakeholders were of the view that Section 5A was welcomed, but then there were comments made on the point that are made around the different rights. Of making available and the confusion around that, even on the subsections. And there were also issues around the person who has reason to have known a belief because of the similar type of provision. So similar types of discussions were made around this to say this is too strong. There's gonna be a lot of infringements, and there might be unintended consequences with these amendments. And then there were some suggestions around the numberings and so on. So we can move to the next slide. And then there was the suggestion that I'm noting on the new provisions of offences in relation to digital rights should be made by way of an amendment to Section 27, Subsection 5 of the Act, and the existing terminology for the purposes of trade should be used together with the element of knowing to be infringement copies to define the offence. So this was one of the suggestions made, to say that Section 27, Subsection 5A must be removed from the bill. Instead, Section 27, Subsection 5 be used. And then there was also proposals that in subsection in 5C, A and B, the words, the language there should be in a singular form, like the verbs, the way that they should be consistently drafted with the other subsections. So then, and also the reasonably have known versus reason to have believed, the implications of sanctions that will be applied in terms of those. So we on this amendment we did note the proposals, and we noted the proposals around the language which are which could be looked into, and the proposal for 27 subsection 5, we looked at it, and our consideration was that maybe it does require further assessment. The way that it was substantiated, we could not really see, in terms of the distinction between 5A and that, the implications. So we thought that we can just work with 5A. Maybe in future we could be looking at something like this proposal. And then there was a point about the commercial purposes that it should be deleted. In fact, many stakeholders said that it should be deleted, because there are speculations of works that could be done digitally. You make something available, you do it for non-commercial purposes, but it has got implications, harmful implications. So there were many suggestions that the commercial purposes might have unintended consequences. It should be removed. But at the same time, someone could innocently speculate something. Of course, that's also an issue, but they could find themselves in a big situation, if especially if it was not for commercial purposes. But the point that the stakeholders made, that the commercial purposes might compromise the protection, has been noted. From our side, we recommend that to the PC, that commercial purposes be considered to be removed from subsection 5A, 27 subsection 5A. So we support that for commercial purposes can be removed. Next slide, please. So this was one of the biggest amendments. I think it captured most of the concerns of the public, where we were informed by other experts to remove examples of fair uses because of the duplication. Some of them have exceptions in the bill. And there was a concern. There were few stakeholders who mentioned this, and they were concerned about the duplication, also saying that in other copyright laws, they don't have as many users as we do in the South African bill. So then we undertook then to remove the duplications. We then removed them, as you can see them highlighted there in black. We can move to the next slide. Then there were many stakeholders raised concerns with this removal. They viewed it as substantive in nature, and that it will have many implications even for the interpretation of the law in the courts, because then there won't be that guideline in terms of what is the uses, the examples were useful because of that. So many stakeholders suggested that they be retained, that they be taken back to where they were because of their use and their usefulness, and the fact that they will also assist in terms of jurisprudence, even for courts to be able to utilize them. So we looked at this with this comments, they were the main ones in terms of the implications of removing this. Other comments, we've noted them. For example, there was a comment that there is no case for specifying illustration as a fair use purpose. It will affect authors of artistic work who license their work precisely for illustration at risk. And there were suggestions on the use of wording. And then there was a comment around the computational analysis that should be considered for addition in the examples. Many also emphasized research, scholarship, and personal uses, that even if you don't bring back the others, at least they should be, because if they are not emphasized, it will affect these sectors, especially research. Research was very much prominent among them. So we then looked at this and we recommend that all the uses be retained, all of them be retained. There was a comparative analysis done with other jurisdictions. Ours, yes, they could be seen as a bit more, but we thought that for clarity and certainty in the public interest, they should be retained because they will assist also with the legal interpretation by the courts. So in terms of the computational analysis, we noted the suggestion. However, we are of the view that because we have such as in the fair use provision, it can address that as part of, and we are also mindful of the fact that there might be a need to also look at other forms of uses. If we add one, two, there might be another 10 others are suggesting, say, what about this one and that one? So we thought the ones that are already there, they could suffice. So that's our humble recommendation. Next slide, please. So the next slide talks to provisions that included fair practice. There was fair practice as a standard that was included. We added standards because they were coming from the views of the public to say the current exceptions are wide. They are subject to potential abuse in the public. They need to be tightened, and then we need to have stronger controls over and above what is already provided for by the bill. So standard practice, a fair practice was one of those proposed standards that should be added in various other provisions to strengthen them. So we can move to the next slide, please. So overall, there were not many comments around fair practice. Some were suggestions, but then there were others who felt that this fair practice was draconian and an issue because it's going to affect the issues of the access to the rights of the users. So there was a comment that said that the committee should retain the reference to fair practice in section 12D, subsection 8, instead of in D1, because it's already there. So there is the comment was that it's a repetition to have it there and also in that, because it's an overarching that talks to the other sections. And also that the fair practice, if the committee is keen to retain, if the committee wants to retain another provision, 12AD that was added, is another provision that I was talked to in the subsequent slides. They were saying that it should not limit the scope of fair practice, and it should not affect the rights for the education sector. And there was a comment that it's not clear what fair practice means and what is the definition of fair practice. And then there were those who were not in favor, but I think overall, many stakeholders supported the inclusion of fair practice. So in terms of our response, we are of the view that fair practice does not have to be defined because already it's a language that is in the Copyright Act, and also it's in the Berne Convention, Article 10 on the quotations and illustrations for teaching.
It's a language that is used in the copyright legislation and commonly used in terms of the fairness principles. So we think that we don't have to define it. And we also support the suggestion that the fair practice that is in 12B subsection 1 can be reconsidered so that because it's already addressed in section 12D subsection 8. So overall, there were not many recommendations that we could look at to say this must change this or that in the except that 12B 8 suggestion. Next slide, please. So this was another major amendment on the layering of the restrictions. So there was a proposal by the public to say that the factors that are in fair use, they should apply to the other exceptions because of that point I made about the exceptions are wide, they have a potential for exploitation of the rights of the authors and the copyright owners, then they need to be tightened. So there were stakeholders, experts who proposed that we include the factors to talk to the other exceptions. So there was that added provision, 12A D, and it's meant to be added in the other exceptions that they should be measured against it. It reads as follows. The exceptions authorized by this Act in sections 12B, C, D, B, 19B and C, in respect of a work or the performance of that work are subject to the principle of fair use determined by the factors contemplated in paragraph B. So the fair use factors are already there for the fair use provision. So they are saying that those factors then should then apply for, the intention was that they will then apply to the they will also apply to the other exceptions. So for example, the factors include the nature of the work in question, the amount and substantiality of the part of the work affected by the act in relation to the whole of that work, and also looking at the purpose and character of the use, and some of the sub considerations around the substantiveness of the use. So we can move to the next slide, please. So this was a major concern that this will have serious unintended consequences. This will also cause confusion even for the courts in terms of interpretation of this addition to the exceptions. And then there were other stakeholders who were of the view that there should be, every exception should be assessed in its own right. And then others were saying already the subsections and the exceptions, they have got their own limitations. So there's no need to add another layer of assessment. So it will also cause vagueness in copyright law and create confusion with the jurisdiction in terms of jurisprudence and interpretation of law. So and more so the concern of access to education, access to research, access issues, violation of rights and taking away the rights that were already provided for in the legislation. So on the next slide, we then come with a recommendation because we've noted the concerns that were raised. You can move to the previous one, Sulu. Okay. So in terms of the way forward on this one, we are saying that we recommend then as a DTIC that this provision be removed. We are recommending that section 12AD be removed as a standard for all the exceptions because of the concerns of the public and also because of the unintended consequences that have been highlighted. We have noted the public concern, but also to highlight that this suggestion was made also by the public, by other experts who felt that currently as the bill stands, it is too wide, especially the exceptions. Most of the educational exceptions. So the balancing of the rights remains a very difficult balance to keep. So we can move to the next slide.
So on this one are the amendments related to the name of the author. There was a the reason why there was an amendment around this. There was the previously we had the wording as far as it's practicable that was used in terms of the name of the author. There was a view that we should use the current wording in the Act on the issues of the source and the name of the author, and then adding that where there is that, to say that where the source is mentioned as well as the name of the author, if it appears on the work. So the words were added to say if the source is mentioned and the word where the name appears on the work, it should be considered. But also as far as practicable, many stakeholders were concerned about as far as is practicable, so they recommended that should be removed, it should be dealt away with. So then the new wording was then considered if it appears on the work in terms of the name of the author, hence all these subsections where it appears are highlighted on the slide. We can move to the next slide. So then there were comments made around this issue of the name of the author, and that there is a misalignment. There was a concern that first it was one of the issues was that it has an unjustifiable limitation, because we are talking about where it appears on the work. It may affect the expropriation of author's moral right to be recognized. And also there was a view that the extent that is practicable, it has been deleted. So there was a view that maybe it should be reconsidered. For instance, in situations where you have like 50 images appearing on your screen at the same time, what then do you, how is that then dealt with? And also there were other concerns about the fact that the way the wording is not consistent with the other wording in the that talks about the same thing in the section 12AC. So there were concerns about the misalignment also on the wording around the name of the author. So we then, as part of the recommendation, we recommend that the amended wording, especially where there's an inconsistency with 12AC, there could be clarification in 12C also when it's looking at if it appears on the work. We initially, as far as practicable, it looked to work, because it's not all the time that you will know who the author is. So it's possible that it may not be possible to indicate the author, because we don't know who the author is, or it's not even there on the work. So hence there was that as far as practicable. But then the public did say it's not desirable. Hence then the concern, the emphasis on the new wording that was used. So we think that there should be alignment considered, and then the advertised wording be retained. Maybe with that clarification and ensuring that there's that alignment. And we think that it's relevant because it's already also provided for in the Act, and many subsections in the bill refers to the author and the name of the author. So because of the previous comments, as far as practicable was then removed from the bill. Next slide, please. And then on the three-step test, I'm not going to go into much detail. There were considerations made because of the proposed suggestions of the public that there should be the three-step test applied in some of the provisions of the bill, say, for instance, in 12D, subsection 1, and also 12C. There were stakeholders who said 12C on temporary production should also look at, like in a similar way with the EU directive, to incorporate the three-step test. So the public informed us to look at this, and then we considered the three-step test in 12C and in 12D subsection 1. We can move to the next slide. And we can move from this one because this is where it was in subsection 2. That's where we incorporated the three-step test, and in B1 as well, where it was incorporated. So there were stakeholders that were concerned about this. We can move to the next slide on the actual comments. Many of the stakeholders were concerned about the way we used the wording in the three-step test to say we did not use the exact words used in the three-step test. There was a wording that was added or amended saying flowing from the copyright in that work. So many stakeholders were saying they did not understand why why this deviation. And then they also said this would have implications for non-consumptive users in terms of the application of the provision. So there was a concern about that, to say it will have this implication of other users that were not intended because of the not flowing from the work added in that. But we also have the view that with treaty languages, a treaty can be, does not have to be used verbatim the way that it is, but we understand the concern with alignment with the treaty languages, alignment with the treaty, with the treaties. And then also there was a strong view that the three-step test is not meant to be incorporated in a law. It serves as a guideline. It serves as a principle to inform the law. Hence, it can be in a preamble of the bill, not necessarily as part of the provisions. And others were saying, why apply it only to two subsections? It can apply to all the exceptions. And even others were saying it should be each and every subsection must talk to a three-step test. So there were various views, but there was an overwhelming view that it could be included. The only issue was how, meaning deviation from the core wording should not be, it should not be allowed. And then there were views that it should be deleted. All of them should be deleted from the bill. The three-step test application should be deleted. So we can then move to the next slide on this matter. And yeah, so there were many concerns that it's part of the layering of the standards. Now you have the three-step test, and then there's that section 12AD that I spoke to of the four factors applying to all the exceptions. And then there's fair practice. So there was a concern of the layering of the standards and of measurements on these exceptions. So we can maybe pass from this page. So I'll move to the response by the DTIC on this one, taking into account all the other comments made. There were also suggestions that focus should not be on the, they should, on 12D1, for example, they should be extracts rather than full course text, full books are being copied. And but the other comments were not necessarily related directly to the advertised clauses. So our response is that we recommend that with the public concerns, overwhelming public concerns, that where we have the three-step test on 12C and D, they be removed. We do note the fact that it is indicated that these are principles to guide the legislation, but not to be part of the legislation. They can be used to interpret the legislation, but not to develop, not to be in the legislation itself. But then, at the same breath, other jurisdictions, we have noted the EU directive, which was adopted by their parliament, where they've used reference to the three-step test to their exceptions. So the principle is noted, but there has been some exceptions on the same principle, so just to highlight that. And then on the flowing from the copyright work, in that work, we the point was noted, although we are also of the view that the use of the pretty languages. They don't always have to be verbatim, like word by word, as long as it captures the main essence of the treaty or of that provision of that treaty or paragraph of that treaty. But the fact that we are saying we are not going to look at the, we are recommending that the three-step test where they were added be excluded, then it means then this issues of the deviation from the core three-step test should not be taken into account. And there was also, I forgot to mention a point, many stakeholders were of the view, some of the issues of special cases, some of the provisions were not necessarily special cases, they were broad. So also adding to the concerns about adding the three-step test. So we can move from this to look to the next slide. So it's 19C subsection 4. On this one, we were of the view as from DTIC of the duplication. And yes, there was a comment made that there is a duplication of commercial purposes in subsection 1 and subsection 4. And also because of the unintended consequences and possible implications of removing commercial purposes from that, from the provision, and also looking at the issues of copying, meaning that there could be an issue with the implications for copies, we highlighted then the but may not permit a user to make a copy or recording of the work for commercial purposes. So this was already in the bill. It was just highlighted because when you look at commercial purposes and then alone, there is that challenge that it could actually mean something else. For example, copies are not allowed only for if they're not for commercial purposes. So there was a confusion that was seen from the proposal to just remove commercial. But then the highlighted text was highlighted because of the issue of the lack of clarity on how this implicates, affects the copying and the unintended consequences with copies and libraries and others who rely on these copies. Can we please move to the next one? So the comments were mainly around the concern of the implication of 19C. Many stakeholders were of the view that we are removing commercial, but commercial should be retained. Others were concerned that we are proposing to remove a provision that that one that was highlighted there. We're proposing to remove that provision, and also that we are adding something that also complicates the provision. So taking into account the submissions and the concerns around the our proposal to remove commercial and even the implications of that highlighted provision, we recommend that we retain the provision as it is. Although on its own, it had some challenges. It's one of the specific subsections the president raised reservations about. There are stakeholders who are of the view it is not even supposed to be on that list of exceptions because it does not necessarily address a particular right. One stakeholder even indicated that the right as it is exploitative because other people are going to treat it as going to the movies or cinema where you can watch a particular, a video or something, audiovisual work for a whole work. So there were concerns with the application of that provision. But because of the potential implications it can have on and also based on the concerns of the public, we then undertook that it can be retained as it is. The wording that was others assumed was added was already in the bill, and we are still of the view that it is a duplication, but removing commercial purposes might also affect that provision given how it is drafted. So we recommend, Chair, that we retain it, the commercial purposes. So, Chair, that was the main proposed amendment. The next page is just to highlight only some of the issues we picked up that were additional issues not advertised, but because they, some of them they are repeated, some of them we thought we should just flag, just to indicate that we did read through everything and we did look at every, most of the comments that were made, especially the ones that were repeated a bit more. So there was an issue around the language of the, in the bill, and I know advocate will address that, and also that reference to government in all the provisions should talk to relevant government departments, and that others were saying that the bill should have allowed for more issues to be advertised. It should not have just been this selected reservations, but it should have allowed for more, and also the issues of access to persons with disabilities. There were concerns around that, access issues that were raised by few stakeholders. There were stakeholders who were concerned that there were no impact assessment done on the bills and also on certain specific provisions of the bill. For example, one stakeholder spoke about personal use exception and private copy levy. And then some of the stakeholders thought that we went beyond what the president has reservations. And there was a concern that there should be provisions for statutory damages that should be brought in, like in the U.S. law of copyright, just to look at statutory damages beyond the relief measures that are provided for in the current Copyright Act. So, Chair, that was the last slide. I know I took very long. Thank you very much to all the stakeholders who participated in this process. Thank you for all your insights and your wisdom shared with the department and the our parliamentary colleagues. We heard your concerns, and thank you very much for your participation in this process. And Chair, over to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Masocha. It has been a marathon session. Thank you very much for your level of energy. I want to propose now, members, that we take a 10-minute break. This has been a marathon input of almost 2 hours. We'll take a 10-minute break, and then we come back to Advocate Van der Merwe's input. So we'll adjourn for 10 minutes. Thank you.